Accession number 18573, Reel 3.
Fred Wannard, Reel 3.
Well, after swallowing that bacon and him extracting it again on that piece of string, I was as sick as a dog. I really thought I was going to die. In fact, I wished I could die. I felt that bad. But the very next day, I wasn't seasick. All disappeared.
You never had it again?
No, never had it again.
How far did the bacon go down your throat?
I wouldn't know. I swallowed it, I know, and he pulled it up again. Oh, I was sick. I wanted to die. I really did. And I've been told this since by other sailors. When you're really badly seasick, you want to die. But there you go.
I know the feeling.
Oh, you've been seasick, have you?
But did you feel seasick underwater?
It depended. When we were south of Greenland, the sea so churned up there, you dive to 40 feet and it's still churned up. In other words, there's no advantage to diving because the sea's so churned up there. But normally, 40 foot under, which is the normal sort of thing a captain will do to give the crew a rest if there are heavy seas, 40 feet down, you're right.
But why was it different in that place?
Well, why south of Greenland? I suppose where different seas meet, I don't know.
Different currents?
Yeah, different currents, yeah.
Can you tell me more about the comradeship that you mentioned amongst U-boat crews?
Now that is fantastic. I like to talk about it because it's about, as far as comradeship goes, the best time of my life on the U-boat. The captain himself, who was, to put it in German, a Kapitänleutnant, which is the equivalent rank of a British Army captain. In other words, 3 pips, that would be the equivalent rank. Now, normally, you would expect, and especially in the German forces, everybody to do nothing but salute all day. No, not on a submarine. The submarine was an entity unto itself, a separate command. We had our own field number. Every single U-boat had its own field number. For the army, they had the field number for the whole army, and that was it. But every single U-boat, their own field number, were command unto themselves. So therefore, we had comradeship. And the U-boat, well, a German U-boat anyway, is built basically for war, obviously. So therefore, they were concerned with having as many armaments in a U-boat as they could possibly cram in. We had an 8.8 gun on deck, a 3.7 gun. We had a machine gun on the conning tower, a 3.7 gun on the conning tower, and another 3.7 gun on the aft deck, which for a U-boat is a lot. The British submarines only had one gun. See? So that's all they were concerned with, cramming in as much as possible. Therefore, the space in the submarine itself was very, very limited. There was a gangway, I would say it wasn't more than 2 foot wide. And that gangway was from front to aft, with compartments in between, obviously, when you have to go through the lockers and things like that. So it was a very cramped situation in the submarine, but the comradeship was there. If the captain was in the way, well, you wanted to get from front to back or the other way around, he was in the way, normally you would stop, click your heels, salute, and ask permission to pass. But not on a submarine. You just give him the elbow and push him out of the way.
The captain?
Yes, the captain. You just barge your way through and push him out of the way. That's the sort of That's the thing I liked about submarines, personally. The comradeship was there. There was no yes or no, sir. It didn't exist. You had respect for him, obviously, because you had to know his job and know it really well. Because I don't know if you ever seen films or not, if you're familiar with a U-boat operating in a war situation, when they actually stalk a trading ship or whatever it might be, any surface ship, the way it happens, if the captain is not on the ball, you're dead. Simple as that. Because by the time I was in submarines, the British invented Aztec, which was a killer, as far as we were concerned anyway. Because as soon as you approach them, they started sending out their signals, they bounce off your hull. You could hear it go ping, ping, ping. You knew they got you. They got you on their screen. And therefore, they can home in on you, start their engines up, and the destroyer goes a lot faster than a submarine, and then start throwing depth charges. So therefore, you really had to be on the ball. And that's where the comradeship will develop, because you rely so much on each other. If any one crew member fouls up, the whole boat is at risk. So you have to be on the ball. Because it wasn't a question of me sitting in my little cubbyhole being a wireless operator. When it came to a war situation and the signal was, or the command was, dive, 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 it meant trouble up there, down you went, I didn't just sit there with my... Because as soon as you dive, you're obsolete as a wireless operator, because you can't send messages underwater. So therefore, you've got another job to do. You've got so many valves to close and some to open, and, you know, that's how it works.
But there must have been some members of your crew who were less good than others.
Well, yes, it applies to any crew, doesn't it, really? We had one, what do they call him in the British force, a cadet. Somebody who's been to officer training school or whatever you might call it, a cadet. And he was what you might call a...
A midshipman.
Midshipman, yeah, that would be it, a midshipman. He was good at the theory. But when it came to the practical thing, he seemed to disintegrate a bit. Let's say he was a bit scared, perhaps, that, yeah. So therefore, he was in trouble. Because everybody took it out on him because he was scared. I was scared. But I wasn't daft enough to show it. I was terrified. But I just managed to hide it. As simple as that. But the comradeship on the boat, as we called it, the boat, the comradeship was fantastic. You did things for each other, with each other, all the time. Because if anybody fouled up, the whole crew could be at risk. Because when it came to dive, 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 everybody had to operate different valves and things like that. Well, if you do it wrong, then you're in trouble, aren't you?
So you were telling me, coming back to the actual boats themselves, you were telling me about this U-28 to start off with.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me about the sequence of boats that you served in, as far as you remember?
I only served on three altogether. This was what I always considered to be a training boat. It was an ancient one, a pre-war thing, when the German Navy was just building up after Hitler came to power. And that was one of the first ones he built. They were 250 tons, the smallest of the submarines. And they were then used, at the beginning of the war, as far as I was informed, they used them for what we called local runs, in other words, just the North Sea. Because their area of operation was very small. Because they couldn't take much fuel on board, and so on and so on. So they only operated in the North Sea. And they were then mainly used, by the time they got around to building more U-boats, when Admiral Dönitz got permission to do so, and he then geared up all the different, what do you call them, shipyards, get up different shipyards to building U-boats, and they churned them out, and literally. So those were made obsolete immediately, those small ones, what we call small ones, 250 tons. They were then used as training ships. And that was one of those things I was on. There was a training ship, virtually. They only operated in the North Sea.
So you didn't do operations in...
Not in the little thing, no, no. None at all. It was just training. To familiarize yourself with where everything is, because to a layman, if he gets on a German submarine, or did then, you go mad. There's so many valves and knobs and things, you just... The whole boat from back to front looked like a typewriter. There's so many different valves and things to operate. But everybody had their own little corner and you operated it. When the command came, for instance, dive, 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 you knew what you had to do. That was it. So you had your section. You knew it to open that valve, close that one, open that one halfway, and that sort of thing.
What is dive, dive, dive in German?
I'm English now.
No mind, it might come back to you later anyway.
It will do, it will do. Tauch. Tauch, tauch, tauch.
And after U-28, what was the second one?
123.
Can you tell me about serving in that one?
Well, it was a Captain Thompson. You will have heard the name.
Sounds English.
Yes, it does, doesn't it? He was a famous U-boat commander and one of the very, very few that survived the war. Very few.
Was he of English origin?
I wouldn't know. I couldn't tell you that. But this definitely was Thompson, T-H. Well, the British spelt the British way. He subsequently received the... He had the Iron Cross, the Knight's Cross with oak leaves, and diamonds, which was the highest decoration there was in Germany.
What was he like as a boss?
He could be what you might call a comrade, provided you did your job to his satisfaction. Then you were a mate. But if you fouled up in any way, you were an outcast. He was a very, very disciplinarian, you might say. But on the other hand, very, very fair if you did your job. But if you fouled up for some reason, and a lot of people fouled up, nerves, a lot of nerves, just got scared. I mean, if you had to dive and suddenly depth charges start exploding around you, you're either stupid or you go to pieces. I don't think there's any other way. If you're stupid, you put up with it, you don't take any notice of it. But most people took a lot of notice. Yeah.
And so did you go on operations in 1, 2, 3?
One trip. That was into the Bay of Biscay. That was a problem because they sunk a freighter there. A British freighter. The crew got into the boats, because by that time there were still the odd gentlemen amongst German U-boat commanders. By that I mean they behaved as they should have done, as instructions demanded at the outbreak of war. In other words, you rescue survivors one way or another. You rescue them or afford them some sort of help when they're in the water, which that order was rescinded in 1941, I believe, by Adolf himself. There was no prisoners taken, no survivors taken on board, nothing. So they were just left to their own devices. If they were fortunate enough to have time enough to put a whatever it is, some sort of safety device into the water, they could swim in. All right, if not, that was just it. No prisoners taken, was the order. Now, Thompson ignore the order. We subsequently been told he got into trouble over it, but I don't know what happened to him. But what he did, he got the whole lot of the crew, and I can't recall offhand how many, it was over 100 of that freighter, into lifeboats, which they had on board. He tied them up behind each other and towed them with the submarine. Now, I do know for a fact that my superior, who was a equivalent of a sergeant, he was a wireless operator in charge of me, he sent a signal via the Red Cross in Switzerland that we had those prisoners, which we were towing behind the submarine, requesting not to be attacked by British Air Force, and, you know. And it didn't happen. We were not attacked. They got as far as Marseille. They released them, so they could be picked up there. We continued our journey into the Atlantic. But that didn't happen afterwards. Because Thompson was one of those people who, you might say, we found out again subsequently, who wasn't in tune with Hitler. And there were quite a number of submarine commanders who were not in tune with him. Most of them were, I will say, but I've known one or two that were not.
So when would this operation have been into the Bay of Biscay, do you think?
You mean the time of year or...?
Which year and maybe month?
The end of 42.
Any other memories you had have of that operation?
No, not really. We went into the Atlantic. They did sink a freighter. What they actually did, we had an 8.8 gun on the front deck. And if there was a freighter on its own, what they usually did, fired a shot in front of his bow. That meant, stop, get off. If they didn't, they gave him a reasonable time. If they didn't, they sent a torpedo in and blew it up. Simple as that. Can't put it any more crudely than that. But they did give him time. They put a shot in front of the bow, and the submarine surfaced so they could see it. And, well, it's, in my experience, they all obeyed that order. They got off the ship into their lifeboats, and then we sunk it. And that's what happened there. It was an 8,000 tonner.
So it was a freighter sailing individually?
Yes, on its own. Completely on its own.
Was that just lucky chance that you ran into that? Or do you think that you were guided onto it?
Oh, no, there was lucky chance. We were what was called... yeah, there again, I'm getting old, you see, I can't remember. We had a free hand to roam around. Because normally, when you left, we were then stationed by then in Lorient in France. From Kiel, where we took off from in Germany, we went to Lorient in France, which was then our home port. And we operated into the Atlantic from there. Now, as far as I know, that was about the only thing that happened on that trip. That freighter. Because we were recalled to Lorient. I changed, that was my second trip. I changed boats. From Lorient, I was transferred to Saint-Nazaire onto a new boat, which was the new one out, the latest 750 tonner.
Which number was that? 187?
187, yeah. It was, in fact, so I've been told, the first 750 tonner produced. It was also the first U boat. It had what they called it, a snorkel on board. It was a metal tube running along the deck, all along the boat. And when you needed to, you operated it so it stood vertically. And as it became vertical, a little basket opened at the top. You crawled into, for a lookout purpose anyway, so you could see a bit further over the horizon. We were the first ones to use that thing. That was experimental, they said. It didn't work very well at all, actually. Because in the Atlantic, I've never known the Atlantic to be absolutely calm. There's always a swell. And this, as I said, was a steel tube. And you can imagine what happened. As the boat was going back and forth, so was the steel tube. The only snag being, on deck, it was just a swell. But up top there, it was several meters. And the poor chap who had to be up there and look out, very often he felt a little bit, just a little bit sick. Because he was being thrown about, I estimate now, must have been about 10 to 12 meters back and forth. He had to put up with that. And we were, as you might say, experimental in this, with this new mast, they called it. And subsequently I've heard that other boats didn't have it. So they obviously realized it wasn't as good as they thought it was, because it was too whippy. And being a steel tube, you know, it was sort of whipping about a bit, and the poor chap up there, he was strapped in, but even so, if you're being whipped about, and in heavy seas, it wasn't often used in heavy seas anyway, but they did obviously have to try it out. This poor chap up there, I mean, he was like a, no, I don't want to be rude, but he sort of, like a thing in the calendar, you know, running backwards and forwards. It was terrible.
And did you have to do that duty?
Oh, I had to go up. We all had to. I never had duty up there. I just had to go up in training and try it out and to see what it was like and all the rest. But I've never actually did it when it was necessary at sea. Well, at sea, obviously, I was at sea, but not in combat.
What was this base at Lorient like?
It was one huge concrete bunker. The whole place was like a huge mass of concrete. It was 12 foot thick, the wall. Reinforced concrete. And that had enormous steel doors, which were operated by enormous engines. In other words, they were lifted up so the boats could go in, and then down come the thing again. You were actually in a, well, like a room, a huge room in there. So you were completely enclosed from the outside world. You were. That was it.
Did you ever have any enemy air raids onto you?
Oh yes. Quite a lot.
What effect did they have, if any?
None at all on the bunker. I mean, you could feel vibration, obviously, when you had a direct hit up. I mean, there was some damage done, but it never affected the bunker as such. I mean, it vibrated, obviously, but never. The concrete was far too thick and reinforced to do much damage.
So you got direct hits actually on the bunker that you were in?
I only remember one ever. Plenty all round, but I only ever remember one direct hit. And it caused quite a bit of a hollow in it at the top, and twisted metal and all the rest, but it didn't get anywhere near through. Nowhere near.
Was damage done roundabout?
Oh, yes, a lot, oh yes. It was continuous anyway, nearly every day. There were air raids nearly every day. We were so used to them, we didn't bother even to hide up in the end. Because people got so blasé, I think is the word. They got so fed up with it, with air raids all the time, and so you just didn't bother.
Did you have Frenchmen working in the base?
Yes.
What jobs did they do?
Well, we had French and Russians working in the submarine base. That caused a bit of trouble. I have to apologize here because it overlaps with what I've said previously, because this happened earlier. Foreign workers, they used to call them. They were in the submarine base, doing all sorts of jobs, like bringing munitions and carting them backwards and forwards, refueling, and all this sort of what they used to call the menial tasks. They were all done by foreign workers. But at the same time, those foreign workers, they were not all that stupid. They used to put sand in the diesel fuel, and little things like that. So you went out, it happened to us actually, we went out from Stettin, we were destined to go into the Atlantic via Shetlands and Faroes. We got halfway and the engine seized up because there was sand in the diesel. So back where to come. We managed to get back with our electric engines.
Was anybody discovered who'd done that?
No. Not as far as I know, anyway. It happened quite a bit, so I was told, anyway. Sabotage, they called it. Because they were all forced labour, so with hindsight, you didn't expect them to do anything else, would you?
But they were used because of labour shortage.
Exactly. Yeah, they were used. And I will say that much. We got in, two or three members of our crew got into trouble over it too. Because they were literally starved, those people. Especially the Russians. The rations they received were what I call starvation diet. And one or two of our crew members felt sorry for them. Because they were in a heck of a state. And you will be familiar with German sausages. You stick one of them up the sleeve, one up that sleeve, and walk out. Because we had to go through sentries and, you know, you just walk out and give them to those chaps. Because they were literally starving. And cigarettes, because we had more than we could use. 40 cigarettes. You can't smoke in a U-boat anyway. You have to ask permission to go on the tower, on the conning tower, and have a smoke, and then go down again. So you couldn't use 40 cigarettes. So we each, in our little lockers we had, that was stacked crammed full of cigarettes. Because you couldn't smoke them. So we used to give them to the... Or some of us did anyway. Give them to those the Russians. They were only too grateful for it.
Were you one of the ones who was caught doing it?
I was never caught. And I can say I did it every day for 10 days. I went out. Because I had a girlfriend in town. Shut your ears. I had a girlfriend in town. I used to go there and we used to take sausages out. And because the submarines were one of the forces in the German setup, we could always draw our rations according to whatever the captain wanted. In other words, he wrote out a list and he got everything on the list, where the other forces, they were given their rations, take it or leave it. So we used to get liqueurs, chocolate, cigarettes. The others never heard of it. That's why we were literally, because almost we were hated. Submariners were hated in Germany, in the rest of the forces. So when we went into a pub anywhere, chairs started flying. Submariners just come in.
But why should the authorities have objected to you doing what you wished with your own food and cigarettes?
It wasn't our food. We used to pinch it. Because it was hanging throughout the U-boat of pipes. You know, the sausages were hanging there, and speck and, you know, hams and that. And you just nicked one and put it up your sleeve and walked out. That was it. We weren't really allowed to do that. But you did it, because some did feel sorry for the poor devils. I mean, after all, they were human as well. I mean, that's it. They were just Russians.
Did you have bombing raids elsewhere in any of the other bases apart from Lorient?
Indeed.
Whereabouts?
In Bremen. Terrible bombing raids in Bremen. That's where I was stationed when the U-boat was being built. What they used to do then is, when the keel was laid for a boat, the crew was assembled, and you had to go down to the harbour and watch.